So here's to all of the good thinkers, and here's to the lonely drinker. But don't you know, let this moment pass.
Hello, folks. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and I'm the host of the Crude Life Media Network and podcast. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to The Crude Life, a place for expert interviews, full-length features, and specialty programs. And it is all thanks to our fine sponsors. Be loyal to our sponsors. They keep the program free and literally keep our lights on.
So here's to watching the clocks of our grandfathers, and here's to stopping and picking flowers, and here's to not letting this moment pass you by.
So we've got Mr. William Prentice on the phone here with the Davis Refinery and the Meridian Energy Group. And one of the reasons why we're having him on the program today is I just spent a few days out in the Bakken, bellied up to a couple cafes, and we were talking about some of the Bakken projects. And, you know, honestly, the Davis Refinery is something people are talking about. And, you know, they got some questions on some things. And so I thought we'd have the CEO on to talk a little bit about some speculation and either misconceptions or myths or facts or however you want to put it. So if you don't mind, I guess I'd like to just start off by asking you a little bit about kind of how the refinery is going from your perspective, and just have you guys been hearing any speculation or anything like that when it comes to the refinery that you guys are building in Belfield?
We're trying to keep track of people's thoughts about the refinery, and I have to apologize for a certain amount of that. You know, in business, you tend to be secretive about what you're doing, and so it took us a while to figure out that that was not helping us and that we needed to be more open about the plans for the refinery. So we're trying to do that now. Some of the things that we've been hearing about the refinery are what we call misconceptions, and we've started to kind of organize ourselves around making sure people are aware of some of these issues and the facts surrounding them. But, you know, starting out with that apology, there are a couple of things. The first one, I guess, that I keep encountering is that there are concerns about the air quality from the refinery. We can't be critical about people worrying about a refinery because most refineries around the country are pretty dirty places. But they're all, 40, 50, 60 years old, too. So as a blank sheet of paper is where we started. We've been able to design this to incorporate all of the emissions technology that's out there. And this is going to be the cleanest refinery in the world when it's finished. The national park that's nearby, we can't fault them for being concerned, but we've addressed that in our design and the modeling that's inherent in the air quality application we filed several months ago shows that this is not going to negatively impact the park.
And actually, that was one of the topics that came up was somebody mentioned the Theodore Roosevelt National Park and whether the refinery would be able to be seen from the Theodore Roosevelt National Park or if any of the smoke coming out of the refinery would flow into the national park. And it sounds like you guys have at least heard of some of these speculations or questions or misconceptions, if you will. Have you heard those two different misconceptions? And if so, how do you kind of, I guess, satisfy some of those questions?
Well, those are the two big ones, and we satisfy those by just having designed around them. An early concern was violating what is called the view shed of the park. In other words, being visible from the park in a way that detracts from the experience of being at the national park. And we spent a lot of money engineering the facility to kind of sit a little bit lower on the site, for instance, and to put the equipment to where you cannot see it from the park. You know, we determined that you couldn't do that through, engineering and surveying design and so forth, but, that was not compelling to a number of people. So we actually, several months back, had a event where during the summer we went out to several places in the park and we had arranged for a weather balloon with a diameter much wider than our largest piece of equipment on the park to be raised to a level above the tallest structure in the refinery. And, you know, we just invited people to go with us, and we wandered all over TR National Park, and you could not see that from the park. You know, plus the fact that the equipment on the site is going to be lighted in a very low-level manner. You know, for some reason, people in the energy industry in times past have always liked to light up their facilities like Christmas trees at night. There's no real reason for that. So, you know, we're not going to do that. And I simply do not believe that you will be able to see the refinery from anywhere in the national park. Now, in terms of air quality, the air quality requirements within the park and around the park are the strongest anywhere in the country. And we have engineered to the point where we do not violate any of those requirements. We're well within those requirements such that the refinery is actually going to be a minor source for air quality permitting. And that requires a tremendous effort, and one that we're very proud of in terms of engineering the project, because it will, in fact, as I mentioned earlier, be the cleanest refinery on this planet when it's done. And we're very proud that this project is going to set a new bar for other facilities in the industry. And the refining industry is going to be a much cleaner industry from now on. And I think we're going to play a big part in that.
We're talking with the CEO of the Meridian Energy Group in the Davis Refinery, Mr. William Prentice. How about from the aesthetic side of things? You mentioned the Theodore Roosevelt National Park with the weather balloon, but how about when you're a little bit closer to it? Is there going to be like any trees or bushes or, I guess, aesthetic landscaping that's going to be done to kind of enhance the immediate visual?
Well, first of all, you know, it's impossible to make a refinery like that pretty to everybody. people that are in the business, they tend to think of them as being absolutely beautiful. But, you know, we start out with the same kind of requirements on exterior finish and painting that were imposed on the nearby crude-by-rail terminals, where they fit into the landscape pretty nicely. We've also optioned and are in the process of acquiring a much, much greater amount of land than we actually need for the refinery. And the purpose of that is for a very wide agricultural buffer around the plant. And we're actually working with the University of North Dakota on how to use that buffer to accomplish some other goals, of the state, such as habitat for instance, the endangered state insect, the bumblebee, will be accommodated in that habitat restoration. And we're also going to be looking at other species of hardwoods and softwoods that would help disguise the facility to nearby communities. And, you know, it's not just visual, that also has an impact on any possible noise pollution, and it certainly does away with most of what would otherwise become dust pollution from the refinery.
Well, I tell you, it would have been fun to have you at the cafe. I mean, instead, I'm just dropping names like Lynn Helms and Doug Goring trying to satisfy some of these questions. So this is good stuff. And one of the things I wanted to mention was I spoke to Lynn Helms earlier in the week, director of North Dakota Mineral Resources, and we talked about the Davis Refinery and how you're going to be using natural gas to fuel a portion or a large portion of the refinery and how that is going to help out the air quality and also the environmental aspects of that. Can you talk to me a little bit about how the natural gas is going to feed into making the refinery be a little bit more environmental and clean than the past ones?
Sure. You know, typically in a refinery, you go through your initial process steps, including a crude column, and you take what are called the lighter ends, which are like butanes and so forth, and those become your fuel for driving the process. In a situation like we have in North Dakota, where there's an excess of natural gas, and in fact, natural gas, flaring is an issue in North Dakota, where it's simply burned and becomes carbon in the atmosphere, we're going to go ahead and be importing a great deal of natural gas from local producers and using that as our fuel. So we maximize the amount of the actual crude oil that becomes liquid fuel at the end of the process while reducing the amount of natural gas that's out there that becomes a burden on production and could otherwise become part of the pollution problem. Natural gas as an inexpensive feedstock for various things is something eventually North Dakota is going to catch up on and start to be able to utilize. But from our perspective, it cuts down on the amount of our crude oil that we have to use for fuel. So we're going to use a lot of it.
We're talking with the CEO of the Meridian Energy Group in the Davis Refinery, Mr. William Prentice. I was talking with Wild Bill. He's a buddy of mine out in the Bakken. He lives about 12 miles outside of Belfield. In fact, his dog just had a litter of 12 puppies. So if anybody's interested, give me a shout. I'll get you caught up with Wild Bill if you want one of his puppies. Anyway, he was mentioning about how he's been following this Davis Refinery because it's going to impact him and his community. And he mentioned the word transparency. He felt that you guys have been transparent, but he's unsure if you've passed all the permits because there's an air permit quality, there's a water commission permit, I believe. And so it gets kind of convoluted at times. Where are we at with some of the permitting? I mean, is there even a water permit needed for something like this? I mean, we were kind of speculating on something like that. We know there's an air quality one needed, but talk to me about maybe the water and just kind of where we're at with some of these permitting.
Sure. And yeah, again, on transparency in general, you know, we're learning how to be more transparent as a private company. It's, you know, we tend to shy away from some of these things, but again, the best way to make sure that we are being transparent is to ask us, and we're open about things that we're actually asked about. And the intent is not to be secretive. But on the issue of permits, there are major and minor permits. The most important permit to date has been the Billings County conditional use permit and rezoning permit that we obtained on July. I think it was July 6th, we actually obtained that. Once that is obtained, then your site becomes a more certain thing, and you can proceed with the other permits that have to be applied for from a very site-specific point of view. I'm looking at a sheet of paper right now that has a list of probably 22 various permits that are required for both construction and operation of the project. One of the other major permits on that list is the permit to construct from the North Dakota Department of Health Air Quality Division. We've spent a lot of time and money, as I mentioned earlier, on air quality and the design of the facility in order to reduce the emissions from the plant. And that permit application was submitted back in October and is in the process of being reviewed. Again, you know, we have no control over the schedule for these types of permits because, you know, the agencies are responsible to the public for doing a good job in reviewing. So, you know, it doesn't do us any good to try to hurry the process along. It just, you know, makes it more difficult for the agency to do a good job. But, you know, we've responded to questions from the air quality guys at the Department of Health. We have another set of design drawings that are getting finished up to be sent there in response to some of their questions. We have a whole bunch of vendors that have provided guarantees of certain emissions levels that are being prepared to forward to the Department of Health. And it's just an ongoing process where we have probably weekly contact with that group to move the project forward. There are also several water-related projects. The North Dakota State Water Commission and the Water Quality Division of the North Dakota Department of Health are the two agencies that mostly handle those water issues. One of the misconceptions that we've heard a lot about relates to where we're getting the water for the project. We've actually been told by the state early on that this is a very sensitive issue to the local agricultural and community and to the cities and the residents. And so we entered into this project knowing that we would never be able to make use of any local potable water sources for anything except maybe use in the office at the site or something like that for drinking water like you would any other house or office in the area. We're actually going to be drawing our water for the process makeup water needs from the Dakota Aquifer, which is a very high salinity aquifer that that starts about 5,500 feet down. It's not used by anybody for anything. It's actually the aquifer in which the drilling companies use for disposal of their wastewater from drilling. So we're making use of wastewater, basically, in order to drive our process. There is no discharge kind of issue with the project. It is designed as a zero discharge facility. So, you know, we've done a lot, just as we have on air, we've done a lot on water to make sure that this is not going to be a blight on the environment or on the local community. You also mentioned earlier issue of smoke or other air stuff. You know, in terms of misconceptions, you know, people drive by a lot of different energy facilities and they see, for instance, steam coming off of the cooling towers. That's steam, not smoke. And, you know, it's not something we're even going to be doing at the refinery. We're using air cooling and not cooling towers for steam, I mean, for cooling. So you're not going to see that big cloud of steam like you do in some of the other facilities around. Also, there is no smoke. I mean, you know, this is, again, going to be an incredibly clean facility. So the thought of having a smokestack with something brown or black coming out of it is simply not something you're going to see at this place.
You must have been reading my mind. You took my next question out of my mind there, where it was here over on the east side of the state, the Red River Valley is known for its sugar beets. In Moorhead, Minnesota, which is right next to Fargo, they've got the sugar beet plant there. And it took people a little while to realize that white smoke coming out was steam. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't smoke, I guess. It was just steam. And they've got a similar plant in Sidney, Montana, which is, you know, less than an hour drive, 45 minutes away from Williston. And that's an energy town. And so I think a lot of people have gotten used to, you know, seeing white smoke and realize that it is steam. But what you're telling me is that really it's not going to be either. I mean, you guys are going to be doing some zero emission standard technology that's not going to really even give you a smokestack or a steam stack. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah. You know, cooling towers are just not a smart way for us to go. You know, we might have a small one over in a corner someplace that would be for some sort of emergency operation, but it's kind of like the flare stack. There are some refineries where the flare is always going, and that's just simply a sign of waste and inefficiency within the process. Our flare is probably going to operate 20 hours a year. You know, so it's a totally different design philosophy because we're putting this project together during a day and age where people don't want to see that. We're not starting with a 40-year-old plant to try to patch it up and make it a little bit cleaner. We're starting with a blank sheet of paper, and we don't have to make those legacy technology decisions that other firms are stuck with.
Bring up a good point there. That what makes this thing so exciting from my perspective is this is a new facility. This is not trying to patchwork something of old. Not that that's not a bad way to go about doing things, but obviously if you're building something new, you're getting virtually state-of-the-art technology throughout, whether it's either concrete or the emissions standards or whether it's, you know, even the flooring. A lot of times it's the state-of-the-art technology that's making these things, I guess, set apart from its competition. So anyway, I just want to also ask you about pipelines and transload facilities. Are you guys going to be doing anything along those lines? Because once you get the product done, it's got to get to market somehow, and then you got to get the product into your refinery as well. Has that been finalized? Have you made steps towards something along a load facility or pipeline?
You know, the safest way to move any of this stuff is by pipeline. And for crude, since it all wants to come to the refinery, we're probably going to bring most of it in by pipeline. And there are several pre-existing gathering systems in the area. So, you know, we're over the next, let's just say, 5 years, we'll probably end up connected to everybody. You know, we haven't made any final decisions on where we're starting out there, but I don't see any reason to dig up the ground and, you know, replicate other people's systems when those systems are underutilized right now. You know, some of the local producers, I mean, some of which are less than 5 or 10 miles away, they'll probably show up at our refinery with a truckload of oil once in a while. And, you know, so we'll have the ability to accept crude oil by truck, but that won't be a major portion of our crude supply. On the product side, it'll be a mixture because some of the products all want to go to a single point, somewhat more distant point where pipeline and or rail makes the most sense, but quite a bit of our product will be distributed and retailed locally. And, you know, so a great deal of our products are going to go out by truck because it's going to serve a local market. But again, you know, the emphasis here has to be on safety and efficiency. And again, you know, if there's a choice to be made, the safest choice is always in a pipeline.
We're talking with William Prentice, the CEO of Meridian Group and the Davis Refinery. Just kind of final question I have for you and more of just, I guess, thoughts. You know, it's neat stopping in some of the cafes in the Bakken and listening to the people's comments, you know, and like I said, oftentimes that leads into speculation and just kind of, you know, call it cafe talk, if you will. And what's the final message, kind of the summary, the wrap-up that you want people to know when it comes to, you know, kind of the direction or where the Davis Refinery is right now and where it's going to be?
Well, when you look at the big moving parts on the project, again, it's being built in two phases. The first phase, Davis Light, 27,500 barrels per day. We're going to start construction on that just as soon as the air quality permit is awarded to us. And we're hopeful that that happens in the early part of this coming summer. You know, that's the key milestone for the first part of the project is the air quality permit. People move to the site and, you know, employment actually begins to happen once that permit is in hand and we can open up the ground and start building. In the meantime, you know, we're busy, with design and procurement of materials and equipment and just kind of moving things around so it's ready for that date. If we can get that permit here in the early part of the coming summer, we will be in operation by the end of the year. You know, some of the shortages that have been seen in the last 2 to 3 weeks, for instance, on diesel and so forth, that's not going to be there anymore once we're in operation. And we're going to serve the local community. So, you know, we're just very excited to be in this position to be able to do this. And everybody at the company is very excited about being a part of North Dakota and what's happening there. And, eager to get started.
We're talking with the CEO of the Meridian Energy Group and the Davis Refinery, Mr. William Prentice. Well, I tell you, the 20 people that I talked to in those cafes over the last week, they're excited for this. It's, you know, people know about it. You know, it's going to add a couple hundred jobs. They do understand the economic and social impact that this refinery is bringing in. And there's some excitement there. So I hope you don't mind if I lean on you from time to time, that if there's interest out there and the people want to know about it and you're willing to be transparent about it, hope you don't mind if I call on you again in the upcoming months, kind of give a countdown on this refinery.
You can tell I love talking about this project. And again, you know, we're learning how to be more open about our plans and so forth. So any help you can give us in doing that, we're very, very grateful for. You know, and again, you know, the information on the company and, you know, where it's located and so forth, we have people around up there all the time now, more than happy to talk about it. If there's a local event that we can appear at to answer questions, we're happy to do that. So just you know, if there's an opportunity to be more open about it, just let us know and we'll tell the story.
I do think you have set the record just off this interview alone of being the most transparent oil company in the history of the United States.
Yeah, we're trying. It's you know, it's almost like we have to go through therapy to be able to do that. But you know, again, if you're working in an area like North Dakota where people are eager to go to work and everybody wants to see the project, it's a lot easier to be transparent. You're among friends at that point. And so, you know, let's keep it going.
Here's to the picture that holds us laughing. And here's to the sound of one hand clapping. And here's to not letting this moment pass. And here's to carrying the weight of the world. And here's to screaming, yeah, never being heard. And here's to not letting this moment pass.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
Oil and gas industry is coming back, and you need a source to keep up to date on the industry. Check out Oil Man, the magazine for leaders in the American energy industry. Each issue gives you a competitive edge with the latest oil and gas news. In addition to the news and analysis, the Oil Man brings you exciting features, publishes photos from yesteryear that chronicle the history of the oil and gas industry. Visit oilman.com to learn more and subscribe today. That's theoilman.com.